Then a special shout out and thank you to all the listeners coming out. And at this time, we want to welcome you to the Heal, Thrill, and Skills Show with your lovely host, Miss Holly Woods.
Welcome all to Heal, Skills, and Thrills. Yes, you are with your girl, Miss Holly Woods of Hartford. Today, our topic is sex addiction. We're going to be bringing it back and forth to music and having a lot of conversation about this topic. We're going to have a couple of people come in and chime in and give us their opinions as well. So before we get too far, let's take it with some music. Thanks for listening to Heal Skills and Thrills. You are listening to the Hill Skills and Thrill Show with your girl, Miss Hollywoods of Hartford. I have with me Mr. Sound Off from the ATL. You want to chime in?
Yes, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Interesting topic tonight. And I'm kind of geared up, you know, for this topic. You know, I kind of don't want to, I guess, engage in too much of my own personal takes on the topic. You know, people can kind of try to judge you by such a topic, but I'm ready to chime in.
Well, you're completely in a non-judgment zone. We're completely judgment-free, everyone. Remember, we're always uncensored and unapologetic about it. The subject, once again, is sex addiction. Is it real? Is that truly, truly, truly a real thing? People wonder, is that something I just made up? Nope, I didn't make it up. I was told it's something that's real, so let's go ahead and delve into that a little bit. There was a couple of topics that were brought up to me when I told people about this topic, and a few of those were about the recovery process, since it is known as a disease. So there's a few things that we're going to talk about, and we're going to take it back to the radio, bring this back to the music for a little bit, and you guys think about that for a little bit. Remember, Sound Off's on as well, so you want a male's point of view, you could always chime in with him. All right, so once again, Hill Skills and Thrills on Blog Talk Radio.
Sex Addicts Anonymous is a spiritual program based on the principles and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Although they're not affiliated with AA. Since my 25th birthday, I've been on a road to self-discovery. It began with my knowledge of my physical well-being. Of course, I get regular checkups because I enjoy the free lollipops after the dentist and the free pamphlets that I bring to the girls at the studio. But more than that, I enjoy the clean bill of health to let my free flag fly from the OBGYN. But particularly at 25, I begin to make appointments for various mental ailments that I considered having. I first went back to my childhood and wanted to seek psychological guidance. I sought out the most expensive, exclusive shrinks in the area. After a year of hour-long sessions, 3 days a week at $3.75 an hour, she referred me to an anonymous sexual addictions group therapist. I was relentless to attend the group therapy sessions, yet alone admit that I had an addiction to, of all things, sex. I just enjoyed telling her all of my escapades, fantasies, and realities. I looked to her like a priestess who gave me the okay to confess my sins to. But after 3 months of no, 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 and hell no, I gave it an okay, I'll try one meeting compromise. But to my dismay, it was exactly what I thought it would be like. I refused to go back. What are your opinions? Give me a call at 347-857-3374. You are listening to Hill Skills and Thrills with your girl Hollywood of Hartford. Time by Lil Wayne and Natasha Mosley by special request from loyal listener Stacy to her man Common, who lives about 1,000 miles away in the ATL.
We are still taking it here live on the Hill Skills and Thrills show. We have Mr. Showtime, I call him, but they call you Sound Off in Atlanta. He is a true friend of mine. He is the Clyde to my Bonnie. We are having the topic of today's sex addiction. We're wondering if it's real, and if it truly is, what's your story? What's your opinion, and what do you believe? We had a couple of people on the line earlier, and things were going back and forth with a little bit of a debate there, but we're going to have the opinion of one very, very loyal listener, and I'm going to read that for you right now.
Since my 25th birthday, I've been on a road to self-discovery. It began with my knowledge of my physical well-being. Of course, I get regular checkups because I enjoy the free lollipops after the dentist and the free pamphlets that I bring to the girls at the studio. But more than that, I enjoy the clean bill of health to let my free flag fly from the OBGYN. But particularly at 25, I begin to make appointments for various mental ailments that I considered having. I first went back to my childhood and wanted to seek psychological guidance. I sought out the most expensive, exclusive shrinks in the area. After a year of hour-long sessions, 3 days a week at $375 an hour, she referred me to an anonymous sexual addictions group therapist. I was relentless to attend the group therapy sessions, yet alone admit that I had an addiction to, of all things, sex. I just enjoyed telling her all of my escapades, fantasies, and realities. I looked to her like a priestess who gave me the okay to confess my sins to. But after 3 months of no, 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 and hell no, I gave it an okay, I'll try one meeting compromise. But to my dismay, it was exactly what I thought it would be like. I refused to go back. What are your opinions? Give me a call at 347-857-3374. You are listening to Heal, Skills, and Thrills with your girl Hollywood of Hartford.
And we have Mr. Sound Off loud and clear. We're going to get your opinion on the line. The question once again was, sex addiction, do you believe it's a real disease?
You know, actually I'm shocked at the whole disease comparison. I never really looked at it like that. I mean... I've always thought that, you know, people that love sex, you know, it's a borderline of lust, love, or you know, being a nympho, I guess, if you want to put it that way. But I never really looked at it in the sense of being a disease, and that's very interesting. For myself, and I think most men, yes, I'm a lover of sex, you know, but I think it's all in the approach and what you're looking for in a sexual relationship. I mean, if you're just going to be out there whoring around, you know, and you're just sleeping with one woman after another uncontrollably, then I think you can look at it in that sense as a disease. But on the other hand, I think if you're someone that's looking for a mate, looking for a spouse, looking for a wife, I think you tend to focus on sex more as a part of the relationship, because I'm one that truly believes, and a lot of women don't agree with this, but sex plays a large part in relationships, and I'll say as high as 70 to 80%. And when I talk to a lot of different women, you know, they don't agree with that. They say things like communication is key, you know, how equally yoked you are, you know, things like that. But I think sex plays a big part in relationships, and I think that's the barometer for me with both of those issues. You know, if you're out whoring around, as I said, you know, previously, and just sleeping with one woman after another, and you just can't get enough sex, then I think, you know, you can look at it as a disease. But on the other hand, I mean, I think if you're looking for a relationship and you're looking to settle down, you know, to look at it more as how big a part will sex play in a relationship. Now, to add to that, I want to say this. When you're dating and you're in the dating arena and you're trying to find that perfect fit, you're trying to find that person you want to settle down with, I'm sorry to say, but sex is a part of that too. I mean, you're not going to commit to someone, you know, and I don't want to base it all on sex, but you're not going to sit down and commit to someone for lack of better words, if you don't know what the goods are about, you know, doing that process. So with that, some guys, I think, sleep around a lot, sort of sampling what's out there, you know, before they finally say, okay, this is the one, you know. And I know I sound like a Neanderthal, you know, saying, oh, God, you know, you're just focusing on sex in a relationship. But again, I stand firmly behind the fact that, I mean, that's a big part of the relationship and who you choose to settle down with.
Well, that's also part of natural selection, wouldn't you agree? Because if it comes down to it, most men would think, okay, if I were to think of the history of man and why they were to choose the mate that they'd chosen, they would think for the sake of raising healthy children and being able to actually sustain their longevity of their family name, to most likely find someone who's more heavier, that will be able to have more children, and that will be able to provide them a lot more comfort for of the homes. So we can always go back to your instincts as a man, or even our instincts as women, to decide on how we tend to mate. There's a known fact that there's women who have a sense of the type of man they look for, and when they tend to sleep with them, they particularly have a sense that they're looking for, something that they're smelling in the air that will let them know if this is a mate to have a child with. So those are the primordial distinctions of your, I guess I should say, the history of man and all, but the value of natural selection behind it. So if it's now considered a disease and an addiction like alcoholism or any drug abuse, why would we have a way of, you know, opening it up to a grand forum in that way to make it just bad all of a sudden? Maybe because we tend to put religion or politics ahead of our natural instincts as humans. That's why even in this country today we have so many rules and laws about what's decent and what's indecent. So back to the original topic about sex addiction, if it's real and it's an actual disease, is too much sex really bad?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I think sex is a beautiful thing. I think accompanied by love. I mean, you know, you have a lot of women out there that, you know, they're addicted to sex or they love sex as well, but, you know, they abstain from it, you know, abstinence or whatever, till they find that person that it's going to mean something about with. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, we all are sexual beings, sexual creatures, and we all want to go about it the right way. But I think in the end, we all have weaknesses to the flesh, men and women. And sometimes we get caught up with that. I don't think there's a person out there that doesn't want to meet the right person that they're equally yoked with sexually. The hard part is just, you know, getting away from the lust factor and the desires. I mean, I think that's the biggest problem. For me, yeah, I'm looking.
Then you're
for
going
that.
Back to the word feelings again. So once again, you right. know, you're talking about the grandeur part of it. I'm talking about the instinctual need. Because we have here in the chat room, Angel Eyes chiming in claiming that there's a theory of oxytocins in the bodies that crave sex. So if that's true, we have the instincts to naturally have either higher or lower abilities to may want or may not want. So who's to say that the person with the higher sex drive is actually a sex addict, or the person with a lower sex act is just seeking someone to feel out in retrospect to potentially have sex with?
Good point. And I do agree with that. The whole oxytocin factor, because some years back, I interviewed a guest, Mr. Real Sims, and he was talking about that. And it was very interesting, you know, when you talk about, you know, your body and the whole oxytocin factor and what, you know, creates this desire for sex. Because when we talk about that, then I guess you're sort of contradicting lust as a factor. Don't you agree?
Well, I mean, if it's a natural instinct to lust because our body chemicals tell us to, then why would it be? I do have the second part of the conversation of the young lady who chimed in earlier and gave us her true opinion. Why don't I put that on? We can talk a little bit more about it after.
Sex Addicts Anonymous is a spiritual program based on the principles and traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Although they're not affiliated with AA or any other organization, they are deeply grateful to the AA for making their recovery possible. Their primary purpose is to stop the addictive sexual behavior and help others receive recovery from sexual addiction. They find new ways of living through programs and carry on their message to seek others with the same need to recover. Membership is open to all who have desire to stop the addictive sexual behavior. Their fellowship is open to women and men, regardless of age, race, religion, or ethnic background, marital status, or occupation. They welcome all members of all sexual identities and orientation. And in their group, there's a collective wisdom that has grown that's been handed down over the years. They learn lots of new solutions to old problems. They have a 12-step program. When you follow the steps, you lead to freedom from addictive sexual behaviors and to healing of your mind, your body, your spirit, relationships, and sexuality. Highly claiming desperation brought them together. They were founded by people who knew the depths of their pain. They found hope in the care of loving higher power, the commitment to helping others receive recovery from sexual addiction just as well. Sexual addiction is a disease affecting the mind, body, and the spirit. We are all addicted to sexual behaviors that were returned over and over despite the consequences, usually becoming more severe over time. We experience it as compulsion, which is an urge that's stronger than our will to resist, and obsession, which is a mental preoccupation with sexual behavior and fantasies. Acting out our feelings and consciousness, this state is very desirable, so the obsessions and rituals that lead up to the sex act itself is part of the high. We seek this addictive high repeatedly, preferring it to many other activities, feeling out our compulsions more strongly than our basic needs, like to eat, to drink, to be safe, to sleep. The compulsions are irresistible, persistent, and insatiable. They went off like alarms in our heads that make it difficult to focus on anything. When we want to act out, the urge just didn't go away, nor did we feel satisfied when we got our fix. Instead, we seek more sexual adventures. The consequences of our actions did not make us stop or limit our acting out. The more we try to control our behavior, the worse it got. We acted out in many different ways. Sometimes we had trouble with one-on-one behavior, sometimes with many. We struggled with promiscuity, anonymous sex, compulsive masturbation, destructive relationships, romantic obsessions, infidelity, obsessive fantasizing, cyber sex, compulsive use of pornography, including the internet, excessive fear or avoidance of sex, prostitution or the use of prostitutes, compulsive cross-dressing, phone sex, voyeurism, exhibitionism, sex in public places, inappropriate touching, sexual assault or molestation, bestiality or other behaviors that involve the risks to ourselves, physical, legal, emotional, or spiritual, and harms to others. These are only examples, obviously, of acting out, but there are many more. The common thread is that we engage in them compulsively. Our willpower was helpless against them, and they all had negative, painful effects. It didn't matter if others appeared to do the same behaviors without ill effects. We could not engage in them without the consequence. But over time, we've become aware of certain characteristics of our lives as sex addicts, and while none of us really fit a perfect profile, we can identify with some of the following traits. We choose sex and romantic obsessions over things we cherish the most, including friends, families, and careers. Sexual thoughts, romantic fantasies, and seductive planning filled our minds and distorted our thinking. Sex became a way to escape our feelings and responsibilities. If this is interesting to you and you have comments or questions and you may want to express, please give me a call at 347-857-3374. Once again, you're listening to Hills, Skills, and Thrills with your girl, Hollywood of Hartford.
And Mr. Soundoff, what do you think about that statement that was heavily made by the Sexual Addictions Anonymous group?
You know, I was just sitting up there thinking when I was listening to that, the whole theory on sexual addiction. And that came across my mind. I'm trying to break down basically the basis and the ground level of sexual addiction. What is the ultimate addiction, ultimate goal? I mean, is it the ultimate orgasm or is it just a physical act? Is it dominance, you know, during sex of your partner? Is it pleasing your partner? It's so many areas. As I was sitting up there pondering that, you know, the statements from the young lady, so many different areas you can go into when you talk about sexual addiction and what is the addiction, what is the craving. As I said, it could be, you know, the dominance of being the dominant, you know, alpha, you know, during sex, the ultimate orgasm or being a pleaser, you know, such as I am. I mean, I'm a pleaser, you know, sexually. I like to please my partner, you know, that's what gets me off. That's what turns me on. To ultimately satisfy my partner. And I'm just wondering, in your opinion, what do you think? First, do you agree that there are different realms of addiction sexually?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I'm going to leave it up to our next caller that's chiming in. That question, once again, was, what do you think the characteristics of a sex addict is? We have the caller in line. You ready to answer the question? Oh. You still there, caller?
Might have been somebody just listening in.
I think Lassie called us and told us she wants to get it in. Well, we're not going to have Lassie take up too much more airtime because I know dogs like to get it in doggy style, but we're trying to talk to humans who have sex addict questions and, of course, humans who may have some comments on the topic and the subject today. So once again, the question was, what are the characteristics of a sex addict? And are they just seeking the ultimate pleasure? You guys take a little bit of time to think about that. Let's go to the radio and add a little more music to those ears. We got a little Sierra with Body Party. Once again, you're on Hill Skills and Thrills with Miss Hollywoods of Hartford. You are still listening to Hills, Skills, and Thrills. This is your girl, Hollywood of Hartford. We still have our caller on the line. We lost him a little earlier. You still there, Lassie? Okay, I'm just making fun of him. It's not Lassie. But we're sitting back having this conversation with a gentleman caller, most likely. And we want to make sure that everyone gets proper timing to answer the question and give us their opinion. But we always have Mr. Soundoff here giving us his very much unapologetic and uncensored true opinion. So let's go ahead and take it back to Mr. Soundoff.
Like I was saying, you know, there are a lot of different arenas, a lot of different areas where, you know, you could be considered, you know, a sex addict, you know, for lack of better words. Or I'm just up here and I'm trying to come to grips with sex addict because it's just such a bold statement, sex addict. And of course, you know, in society they will tarnish that title and we'll be like, oh, that person's bad. Oh, that's all they think about. Oh, that person's a whore. You know, it's just such a stereotype that comes with that title. So every time I hear the name, it's like, you know, I cringe a little bit because, I mean, I'm a lover of sex. I mean, I can't deny a sex addict. Therefore, I would be tentative to label myself, you know, with that title, even if it fits. But it's a tough title, you know, to kind of tag the person with. I wanted to pose a question to you also outside of the last question you posed. What about hereditary? Do you think sexual addiction hereditary?
Well, I believe most addictions, like all addictions, are pretty much hereditary, but it's about how you tend to attack any addiction. If you see yourself as a person who wants to get well or wants to have a life that's a little bit easier to live, meaning manageable, the young lady we had speaking earlier had a big problem with being able to just open to the idea of sex not being everything in her life. So it was literally really hard for her to even wake up in a day without thinking of sex or do a job or take care of her family or take care of her life. So it becomes a hindrance in your life, then you truly do have an addiction.
Okay. Very good. Let me ask you, I want to propose a scenario to you. And I want to get your opinion and all the callers out there and all the people in the chat room. If you have a guest 13156 in the room, appreciate you stopping by, guest. I want to propose this to you. Let's say you have a situation where there's a couple. There's a couple, and they're in love. They want to be together. They're equally yoked. Communication, all the good stuff right across the board. But one of the partners, and we'll go ahead and say it's the male, which I think would be most common in this situation. Let's just put the sex addict title on the male. And the female, it's, you know, more laid back, you know, more conventional, doesn't get all into the oral and you know, all the different positions and doesn't like to explore. Can you fault that male for placing that kind of pressure on his counterpart to the point where the relationship, you know, may not last? Or do you deem that as the male being selfish, you know, focusing too much on sex with this being a disease as we deemed it tonight? Do you think the male, it's his place to go out and get help to save that relationship? The different things I was thinking about, you know, in the arena of, you know, a relationship, not just, you know, a sex addict out there just sleeping around or whatnot. No one gets your take on that, as well as any callers or anybody that's traveling.
Okay, well, that's definitely a good question because we do tend to go back to feelings and relationships and, you know, the meat and potatoes behind it all. But this is literally just straight sex. So we're talking about someone that may have a problem being able to express emotions or feelings in any other way. So your question, if I'm going to get this right, was about what should a man do if his counterpart doesn't perform up to his standard?
Yes, that's it.
You're asking? Yes. Okay. Yes. Well, like anything in life, you know, things can be exercised and muscle memory can be performed, and you could literally get through life with a little step every day as your goal. But a partner who's open to communicating with their partner about what their needs and wants are will go further than anyone that's going to sit back and just assume they'll know what you like just by being adventurous. So you'd have to have that partner, by all means, really open to the idea of communicating both in the bedroom and outside the bedroom about what their wants and needs are. Because women love a challenge. I know men truly do, but women do as well. And if we understand that what we are doing is not quite up to par, we're going to want to try to challenge ourselves to be better. And I've noticed from most of the women that I've been around, especially once you get a little older and you're more mature and comfortable with yourself, you're more adventurous and you want to explore those options. You want to test your limits and see how far you can go. So, especially with your partner, unfortunately, it's the men who tend to shut down later in the relationship, and the conversation tends to be void and null because the women feel a little bit embarrassed about telling their partner after all these years they have a little fantasy of wanting to be spanked or something a little wilder or whatever, or vice versa. The partner may feel a little bit, you know, the man may feel like, hey, I want to just hold your head there or whatever, whatever may be. It's all about communicating that thought and that idea so that both partners are comfortable. You don't want to surprise someone because then that's kind of like date rape, no matter if you're married or not.
Right.
So that would be my opinion to that. I would just suggest communication because when it comes down to it, the true essence of a sex addict is someone who's unable to communicate in another way other than sexually. So that's where there is a problem because there's no other anything else to really bond or bring the couple together or even have a couple, because you have a person who has a me need, and it's usually about the next high, which is how do I get the next orgasm? I want to get it. I'm really, really excited to do it in the alley, or I'm really want to go in an elevator with glass, or I want to be at a funeral home, whatever people's fetishes are. They're truly claiming is a sexual addiction. So it's unfortunate that we live in this society that tends to put everyone in a box, especially when it comes to their sexual needs, because we are all human. We all have different needs. But who are we to judge, truly?
Okay. Now, I want to take this question a step further. Something real interesting that just crossed my mind. This whole new thing now in the dating arena, in the relationship arena, open relationships where, you know, you can do you, I can do me, you know, but we're together, you know, the whole open relationship thing, even if you want to tag it as, you know, swingers or whatever. Do you think there's a correlation between that and what we just discussed, maybe a couple that's not sexually equally yoked? You know, the alpha of the relationship, you know, wants too much sex, and the counterpart, you know, not as much. Do you think that's a situation that could lead to, hey, you know, I can't give you what you want, so look, we're together, I love you, you love me, but let's have an open relationship. I'm giving you permission to go out there and get what you need, you know, just don't bring anything back to me, and you'll be satisfied in that life, and, you know, for lack of better words, you won't slip every night and kill me or bang me out or get an attitude because I can't hang with, you know, your sexual appetite. Do you think that's a situation that has led to, you know, a very common open relationships today?
Well, fortunately, we live in a world where everyone's kind of like letting you know what type of relationship they have anyway. Their status is claiming, hey, I'm this or I'm that. So it's kind of like already in your face. So, I mean, in my opinion, it's just a hall pass for single people who are not as, I guess, serious in a relationship, because an open relationship is mostly for married people, I would think.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't consider it to be for single people. And now, ladies, uh-huh. you pay attention to this, because Mr. Soundoff is no joke here. He is very, very serious when it comes to the matters of the heart. So he's very, 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 very on point with this when it comes to thinking about outside the box a little bit. If your true desire is to be sexually with someone who may please you more than your partner, is it okay to discuss that with your partner and maybe take the option of an open relationship? Absolutely, it's okay to have that conversation. You may not have the partner who may want to do that, but it's always good to have that conversation. But unfortunately, it may lead to conversations later in life where the partner may claim some sort of distrust due to you having needs outside of what he can provide or what she can provide, or mm-hmm. what you've discussed that may have or may have not been an option in your relationship. So mm-hmm. open relationships are mostly for marriages, from people who are married, they're together. I'm not going to say stuck, but their idea of sex goes beyond their marriage. Now, mm-hmm. the hall pass for the single people, I don't think an open relationship leads to anything other than just a lot of cheating and threesomes unwanted or unwarranted or foursomes or whomever, just things that are not going to keep the relationship strong and together. So that's unfortunate, but it does happen and does happen often. I would suggest that communication once again becomes the staple in any relationship. But like I said, ladies, you better watch out. It's very serious.
Mm-hmm,
Mr. Soundoff's mm-hmm. going to be married in the next few months talking like this. Better watch it.
I really, really wish you could add some more time to this show. You got 9 minutes. I got a couple other things I want to throw out there. We got to do a part two on this. I got so much I want to, add to this topic. I guess the next thing I want to talk about, and it's sort of a funny topic. I find it hard to believe. As I stated earlier, I think in the most common factor when we talk about the more dominant appetite in a sexual relationship, I think would be the man. More probably would be the sex addict more than a woman. And I want to know, do you agree with that? Do you see it in the reverse? Do you see it in a situation where the woman can be the alpha sexual appetite, if you will, of the relationship, and she's the one that's the sex thing, mental, however you want to put it, the one with the disease, and the man just can't keep up with her? And do you see it sort of reverse in that sense?
Absolutely. That's very evident.
Okay, more so than not, though. I mean, if we were talking numbers, would you say more women than men or more men than women?
Well, there are more women that are willing to admit they have a problem. Men want to just fix problems and try to avoid the actual process. So mm-hmm. at the meeting that I went to have the interview, there were more women at the Sex Addicts Anonymous meeting than there were men. And it's kind of crazy. You may not think that, but yes, women are willing to get the help that they need a little bit faster than guys are. They don't really realize they have a problem. They're thinking that maybe they're just viral, studly guys who have high testosterone. Not necessarily an issue. Same way with someone with a high tolerance for drinking or someone with a high tolerance for drugs. They tend to think they don't necessarily really have a problem. They just have a different sort of body or mindset than most others. So they give themselves the excuse to act out on the behaviors. But like I sat in on the meeting and I noticed that all the women that were sitting there, they were taking notes. They were really paying attention. Most of the men were back just listening, shaking their heads, most likely scouting out the women, like, which of these girls can I take home and possibly just deal with my next fix? And possibly there's girls thinking the same thing. But we've had this switchboard off the hook today. It's been lit up like crazy, and I haven't been able to really speak to anyone but Lassie. And unfortunately, like I said, this is a humans only talk conversation, and I really don't speak dog. But I would love to have you come in at any time, because we love having talkers just to chat and just hang out with us at any time. We do have a few minutes left on the line, and we want to have a little bit more of this as a conversation before we head out. But we're going to take it a little bit more to the music, and we look forward to not only talking to you, but sexting and texting you often. You are still listening to the Hill Skills and Thrill Show with your girl Hollywood of Hartford. We still have a little time here. We're talking about sex addicts, the addiction. Is it real? We even had a young lady giving us her true story. We're going to finish this up giving you a little bit more of her story, and hopefully we can get someone else to chime in and give us their opinion before we head out. Love having you guys here. It's such a pleasure to spend quality time with friends on the radio. But I truly, truly, truly look forward to hearing your comments and your reviews a little later. So once again, that number is 347-857-3374. Give me a ring before we go to bed.
Hello?
And others, and I made attempts to stop the behavior, but it failed. Much of the time was spent either being sexual or managing my crises and problems that arose because of the sexual behavior. I violated my own values, and sex became the chief measure of what I was found important. My sexual choices created fear and despair. My life became filled with deceit in order to hide my behavior. I found myself isolated and alone, and I felt spiritually empty. In addition, I lost everything. The disease had a life and an agenda of itself. It's a hard fact to accept, but I truly was an addict.
and I did not at all consider needing the help that was offered in a group session. So
you are still listening to Hill Skills and Thrills Radio with your girl, Miss Hollywoods of Hartford. We're talking about sex addiction. I still have Mr. Show Sound Off here. I'm going to call him Showtime because he's a Showtime to my Hollywood. Like I said, it's my great buddy here. We're over here having this wonderful conversation, and hopefully you're all listening in. If you have your opinions, please give us a call. We have a few moments left. That number is 347-857-3374. You want to say anything before we sound off, Mr. Sound Off?
Okay, yeah, I'm still here. If you wanted to, I know you can bring your callers in, and even if the show time runs out, anybody on the call-in line can still chime in, and the show will still be recording when you play it back. So even if the time runs out, anybody that calls in right now, you can get in on this conversation after the time's run out. It won't be broadcasting live on Blog Talk Radio. But anybody on the phone lines, the show will still continue. If you're in the chat room, you won't be able to hear the show unless you call in. So anybody you have, Holly, on the phone lines, you can bring them in now, and the show will still continue after it goes off air. I wanted to go into a different area. I wanted to talk about sexual addiction as it's related to porn. As it's related to porn, if you're a lover of porn, if you frequent porn, do you feel that too much porn on a regular basis can create the sexual addiction, the disease, if you will? And I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, my opinion, as always, is that anything that's of too much, I would consider it bad. If you have just a little of everything in life, life will definitely give you everything you need. Too much of anything is too bad, unfortunately. So, in my opinion, porn is great. Any form of pornography or art or sexual pleasure material that will have you enticed and maybe thinking outside the box a little bit about your own needs and wants, I absolutely, completely would urge you to explore, because as an adult, you need to have your senses completely open to things that you may not have actually thought of trying before. I'm not saying go crazy, go wild. You know, I don't do anything crazier than most normal people would, but, you know, what do you consider normal in comparison to what I would consider normal? So there we are. I mean, I love porn. I think it's amazing. I think the quality of a lot of good cinema comes from porn, because it comes from understanding angles. It comes from understanding natural body when it comes to improvising. You know, you're doing a lot. So, and you're having a lot of fun expressing something that is, like I said, a lot of fun in front of people, or may not, or may express that in a sexual fetish way. Yes, you're a voyeur as well. So I don't see anything wrong with it, unless it's too much. Too much of anything is too bad.
Okay. Good point. Do you feel, just off the cuff, straight out question, do you feel the sexual addiction disease is more physical, the physical act of sex, you know, penetration, you know, the old feel so good, you know, all of that? Do you feel it's more physical, or do you feel it's more mental?
Well, if it's a sexual addiction, it would be completely physical. And because it's so physical, it's so deep-rootedly mental, because once again, we have the word addiction as the root there. So, I mean, it has to be something deep down inside your mind where you're maybe relating it back to something of childhood or something of teenagehood or something where your sexual discoveries really began, and you're starting to want to explore that as an adult subconsciously. So, in my opinion, absolutely. I have a caller.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Hello?
I have a caller in line. You want to call and say hi?
Hello?
Hi, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Holly. This is Ralph.
Hey, babe. How are you?
I'm doing good. It took me a minute to find your show. So I didn't actually hear the entire show. I heard really the last 20-some-odd minutes of it.
But well, you can always check us out in the archives. We'll be there for a while.
Yeah, I missed last week's show. I wasn't here for last week's show. I really had something to say about that one, but that had to be another day.
Okay.
Yeah, but the topic today is sexual addiction, and I'm going to answer the two questions the gentleman just asked about first about porn, and I would have to say the answer to that question is no. No, it is not, because I work in the porn industry right now. And as much as I'm around women walking around butt naked and the availability of sex is constant, I choose myself not to constantly indulge it. Because you have to look at it like this. And Holly is absolutely right. Anything that you constantly do is bad for you. But when it comes to the world of porn, I'm saying this now as a person in this business, if I constantly indulge in that vice, then no one is going to take me seriously. The only thing that I'm just going around there for sex, because I can just have it anytime I feel like it, right? I'm in a business, and it's called the business for a reason. But whether it's your business or your personal life, you have to treat it with some senses of restraint, some senses of control. It's when you don't have that sense of control where it runs around, and then you have all the negativity and fallout that comes with it.
Okay.
That's really what it's all about. It's about a sense of control. It's like you know that, you know, you may like chocolate, but you know good and well you're not going to sit there and go through 20 Hershey chocolate bars or like 16 bags of Godiva chocolate. Why? Because you know it could kill you. So what makes you think that constantly having sex with that wouldn't do the same thing?
Okay.
You know, people want to sit back and say, oh, it feels good, I'm getting my swerve on, I'm getting that nut. It's all the same thing. Too much anything is always going to be bad for you.
Okay. I have a question for you. Okay, you're in the porn industry, correct?
Yes.
In the porn industry. Okay, what guided you to that career choice? I mean, was it your love of sex? Sexual addiction, as you know, the topic we're talking about today. Or, I mean, if someone just said, hey, you know, you look like you could do porn, you know, they make good money in porn, you know, you should try it out. I mean, what was your draw to you know, getting into the porn industry as a career? I mean, was it sexual addiction, the fact that you love sex, or was it a suggestion by someone? I mean, what led you to that?
Okay, I'm going to answer that question as well, Lincoln. I'm going to answer that question. No, it wasn't because I have an addiction to sex. What actually did it is that many, many years ago, I used to attend this event in Atlantic City called the East Coast Video Show. And I started to, because I worked in the video business. And actually, when I say I'm in the porn business, I'm actually a manager to someone in the porn business. So even though I'm not an active on-screen participant, I'm always behind the scenes making all the other kind of moves.
Gotcha.
But as many times as I kept going to that show, one person who I really became friends with was Alexander DeVoe, and at the time his wife Diana DeVoe.
Okay.
They saw me all the time, and then one day he asked me, he said, hey, Rob, you look like you're ready to do a porn. I see you here all the time. You want to do a porn? And that was when I was 27 years old, and I had said, no, I didn't. Because at that time, I did not think that I was mentally ready to go into that world.
Okay.
Because of the fact that I felt that if I went into that world, would I get sucked up into it? And all I want to do is have sex, and I wouldn't be able to do whatever job they was going to give me to do. I was never going to be able to do it because I was too worried about banging this chick, banging this chick, banging this chick, banging this chick. So now, at this age, the second opportunity came up to me, and I said yes, because now I'm at an age, not only, I guess, age-wise, but mentally-wise, where I can take it as for what it is. It's a business. It's not there for fun and games. It's not there to just be saying, oh, I see these naked chicks on the set, so let me just go over there, say a couple of words, and, you know, just take in the back room and bang the hell out of it. That's not what it is. It's a business. And it all falls into restraints. Right? Now, the other part of that question that you asked, which I'm actually forgetting right now. I forget what the other part of the question was. But, no, the main answer is no. It wasn't because of sexual addiction. It was just something that had always kind of – I had kind of been interested in. And when I originally said no, I kind of lost interest in it. And actually what really did it, because I had moved away. I lived in Europe for a while.
Okay.
And I just saw how free Europeans were with sex. I mean, because even where I lived in Germany, and
okay.
the place where I went to go take my dry cleaning, there was a dry cleaner on the corner. There was a McDonald's on the other corner. In the middle of it was a place called the Sex Palace.
Gotcha.
And on the other side of the base, on the side of the road, there was a thing called the white van.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what the white van, because in Germany, prostitution is actually legal.
Okay.
Women have to apply for a license. You have to pay taxes on it, all that good stuff. But what they would do is that they would rent like a white cargo van.
Okay.
Park on the side of the road and wave people down to have sex with them.
Okay.
Right? And yeah. it's like the most amazing thing. And you sit there, you sit like, no way that's going to happen. Until one night I was coming home from the base, and I actually saw this girl in a white cargo van, like she was a white McDonald's drive-thru window,
mm-hmm.
sticking her breast out, saying, come on over.
Wow. Wow.
I saw commercials on television. Like, I saw one commercial that was for a lipstick, and basically it was about the girl putting lipstick on to give a guy a blowjob.
Wow. Wow.
So after that, my eyes started becoming a little bit more open to the idea of sex, and like going throughout Europe and seeing, you know, going to the beach and just seeing people, how they talk and that they walk. Because here in the United States, when it comes to sex, we're very, very
Puritan.
Repressed.
Very yes. Puritan.
Yes, we seem to think that, you know, if you talk about, you know, like matter of fact, I happen to be sitting here tonight watching an episode of Sopranos.
Okay.
And part of the episode was about Junior Soprano
uh-huh.
was with his mistress or whatever, and he kept giving the mistress oral sex, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he told her, he said, don't tell anybody that I do that. So she said, why? He said, well, because in our society, which was the mob life, if you do that, you looked over as weak. You looked over as your possible homosexual.
No, it's because you are what you eat in the mob life, so they don't let you do that.
Right, but she's saying, but why should I keep quiet? Because you're pleasing your woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a repressed feeling.
What they want to do. The mob life has a very domineering mentality where they don't need to please a woman. A woman's supposed to please them. So
I mean, I understand it. That's the outwardly appearance, but I'm quite sure people within, you know, behind closed doors, they're doing just all the freaky stuff that we as regular people do ourselves. They just don't.
Mm-hmm.
Say, they just don't brag about it.
They just
exactly.
can't tell each other. Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly.
They're not gonna sit there in the corner when they're you know in the meeting in the morning. They're not gonna say, yeah, you know, I ate my girl out last night. They're not gonna do that. They're just
right.
not gonna do it. But it just shows. It just shows the repressed state that we as this country live in when it comes to sexuality.
No
that
doubt.
we want to keep it quiet. Like, you know, oh my God, you know, your girlfriend gives you head. Oh, she's bad. Oh, you just don't do missionary. Oh, you bad. Oh my God, you had a threesome. Oh my God, you're bad. You know, no,
right.
you're not. You're not.
Right.
All you're doing is pushing your boundaries. Some
right.
people do it because they just want to try it out to see what the whole hubbub is about. Some people want to do it because they want to just experiment. And then you have some people do it because they want to keep their relationship fresh. They don't want to keep getting. They want to keep
exactly
it fresh.
Right,
they don't
that's exactly what I was going to go with that. You hit it right on the head. Keep it fresh. I mean, we're living in a society today where sex is prevalent everywhere. It's in the music. It's in the movies. It's on TV. It's in the books. It's everywhere. And I think in a relationship, you have to keep it fresh because there are so many opportunities outside of your own relationship. I mean, if you're an attractive guy or an attractive female, you know, you're going to get put in positions where you're going to get compromised in your relationship. So I think it's very, very important that you keep it fresh. And that's why I was speaking upon earlier, you know, when you have a situation of an alpha part in that sexual relationship to your counterpart that may not be as, you know, sexually active or with that type of sexual appetite. And that goes all back to the choice you make with who you want to be with. I mean, I argue with women all the time. All sex shouldn't be that much of a factor of a relationship. That shouldn't be the weighing factor in who you choose as your mate. But I disagree. It should be. Because in the long run, it's going to catch up to you. Sex is going to be a part of your relationship.
I totally agree. Now, I heard some of the part of the show where the question came up about the threesomes. Mm-hmm. Now, I was in a relationship with a girl, and we did have some threesomes. One reason why guys blow that opportunity to have threesomes because you open your mouth. Don't mm-hmm. say, Jack, let this is my advice for guys. If you want a threesome mm-hmm. with your girlfriend, let your girl make the decision to have a threesome.
That is. Oh, God,
don't
so
bring
cute.
It up. Don't bring
so
it up.
Cute.
Don't try to pressure her. Let her make that decision. But
yeah.
after she makes the decision, mm-hmm. you and her sit down and you lay down some serious ground rules on how this thing is going to go.
Yes, yes. I so agree. You know the funny thing about threesomes, and I tell people this all the time, the funny thing about threesomes is guys don't get it. You're just lucky to be there. Because 90% of the time, threesomes, it's really about the females. But at the same time, you got two females that are exploring each other. They liked each other. One has come out, and the other sort of went along with it. And the guy, he's just the extra. You know, you have situations where a guy might, you know, a girl might want to see her guy fuck another girl or something like that, better get her off. But most of the time, man, we're lucky just to be there. And it's like you just said, keep your mouth closed and just enjoy the ride. Just enjoy mm-hmm. the ride.
Exactly. You just sit back on the sideline, act surprised, get your Denzel Washington acting role on, be surprised, and when it happens, it happens. And then after it happens, you don't pressure saying, yo, baby, when are we going to do that again? Yo, that shit was good,
exactly.
When are we going to do it again?
Exactly.
Shut up.
Exactly. Do you agree, and Holly, you can chime in on this, representing the women. Interesting question. Do you agree that the biggest fear for most women, and I'm speaking women that are in a relationship with a guy that wants to try, you know, the threesome thing. But do you both agree the biggest fear for most women that indulge in that with their guy is the other female, and you know, creeping, and you know, he's gonna go try to get with her behind my back? Do you both agree that's the biggest problem with threesomes? Trust amongst the three.
Well, that's where communication once again comes in, because I remember clearly that there were rules placed in a threesome that were completely broken because the excitement, you know, when you're in the mode of everything, things just kind of go. And I remember being in a participant of a threesome where I left, and I don't even think they knew I left.
Wow.
Wow.
I seriously was so bored, and it wasn't them, it was me, because I was so in love with the guy. I really wasn't a lesbian to really explore with this other woman that I thought was cute, but I didn't really think she was that hot. I mean, there was only one woman I've ever thought was lesbian hot, and you know who that is, Ralph.
No, who is it?
Mahogany.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she tried to rape me in a cab once, but that was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
But it was kind of like wanted rape. Like, she was very aggressive, and I was, like, into that for her. She was beautiful, and she just, yeah, everything about Mahogany was awesome. But I've never really thought that the submissive, subservient type woman was sexy. And at the time, the partner that I was with, he really thought that was hot, and he wanted us both to be like his little slave girls, feeding him grapes and, you know, sharing the lollipop. And I'm like, I don't even like to kiss girls, and I'm like licking her spit. This is kind of stupid. And I just didn't like it.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
and I left.
My girl, when we did the threesome, right, one thing that she was very adamant was that no matter how long this goes on, every single time you switch girls, you got to put a different condom on.
Yes.
She said, no, I'm not sharing
her.
That got to go.
Gotcha.
You know,
gotcha.
But at the end of the day, you still have to have some severe ground rules. Mm-hmm. And to answer your question, I don't think the girl has the fear that the guy is going to go off with the other chick. I think she has the fear that the guy is going to do stuff to the other girls that he's not willing to do with her.
Right.
You know? And I think that's one reason why a lot of women don't want to have threesomes, because they think the guy can't control it. And I'm not going to lie, most guys can't control it, because they're just saying, it's their ego saying, oh, shit, I got two girls. Oh, shit, oh, I'm the man.
And you know what? It's so true what you just said. Good point. Because it's just so hard. It's so hard to be in a threesome with someone you care about, someone you love, someone that's your girl. I mean, I've participated in threesomes. I've had three women at one time.
I know that. Isn't that the best threesome when you got three girls at the same time?
That's not a threesome anymore, fellas. That's a foursome. You guys got to get your math straight.
No, that's a genuine threesome. Genuine threesome is three chicks.
That's a foursome.
Really, it is. But I'm going to tell you, when I did that, it was cool because neither one of the females, you know, was my lady or was my girl. It's just three buddies, you know, we kicked and hung out, and it started out the night before, a couple of nights before, where it was just two. And they brought a third female, and it was so cool. I told the story so many times, and it's so funny because the two females that I initially did it with, we all clicked. We all clicked. There was no drama. There was no love. There was no feelings. It was just something, you know, we wanted to do. They brought another female, like, two nights later. I just told, oh, God, we had this experience. This guy, that. But that was another female. And for lack of a better word, she was on her Beyonce shit. You know, thinking she was the shit. She looked good. She looked good, banging body the whole night. But it was just so funny how when you interject that attitude, that mystique, and two, something that was fun, two nights ago, how it just fucks up the whole mood, because she was really on her Beyonce shit like it was a pleasure for us three to be fucking her. And the coolest shit I have ever experienced in my life took place that night. The two females that I was with prior, a couple of nights ago, we were all doing our thing. We all felt that the vibe wasn't the same as it was two nights ago. So we all looked each other off in the eyes, me and the other two females, and it's like we both knew exactly what we were thinking. Like, fuck, we started this two nights ago. We ain't about to let her come in here and run shit. And when I tell you in an instant, we fucked the shit out of that girl. Man, it was the most amazing thing. I mean, we made a tap out, dog. I mean, it was so funny. She couldn't breathe if it wasn't one female on her or another female down low or me doing my thing, man. And it was so fun because she enjoyed it. I think she had the attitude she wanted to come in and dominate that situation. But to be taken out of that realm, I think she enjoyed it. But getting back to my original point, it's so hard for guys to be involved in threesomes, with your girl. For me, it's hard, and I'll tell you why. It's not so much like you just said, Ralph, of your female being jealous of the other female, or are you going to creep off with them. But I think for most females that are in a relationship and they engage their guy in a threesome, I think the main factor is, are you going to enjoy the other woman better than your girl? I mean, your girl, let's make no mistake about it, her antennas are up. If you give that other girl a certain moment when she's sucking you off or giving you her that she ain't, trying to get before, it's going to be problems.
Yep.
If you date her, you're having sex, and you just get the wrong moment or say some shit like, damn, this shit is good. It's going to be some problems.
Yeah, or if you in the moment and you say something that you normally wouldn't say to your girl.
Yeah, right.
She's like, whoa, you ain't falling in love with this bitch, is you?
Exactly. So that's why I've always said that in threesomes, it's tough for a guy. It's tough for a guy. We got more to lose than anybody because it's like we have to be on point so much, not to say the wrong thing, not to, react the wrong way. So what I'm saying is, how could you possibly enjoy that? How could you possibly enjoy a threesome with your girl and somebody else having to be on point like that the entire time and not really just being able to enjoy it?
That is extremely hard, and I'm not going to sit here and say I knew how to do it because I didn't, but I think I did do it because you don't show the other girl more attention than your girl. Mm-hmm. You damn sure certain things that you may do with your girl, you don't do that with the other girl. Like, if you give your girl head, don't give the other girl head. Don't do that. Let the girl give you head. And while you're giving your girl head, don't do that to the girl. Because she's going to be like, whoa, you fall in love with this bitch? You know?
Right.
And then three, when it's over and it's done for the night, it's over. If you fuck your girl to sleep and you know she knocked out, but the other girl said, wait, she said, no, I can go, I want to go a little more. Don't be stupid and say, yeah, I got another round in me. Because then you'll be on the couch banging that chick, and then your girl will wake up and see the two of y'all fucking. And she's like, oh, you fall in love with this bitch?
I'll tell you another no-no. No fucking cuddling.
Don't do that. When it's over and the two and you all three are laying in the bed and you're like, damn, that was good, you roll over to the side where your girl is at. You put your arm around her. Don't put your arm around the other bitch.
I have one rule, and this is how it should be. When you have a threesome and you're with your partner, you just pretend the other partner is a blow-up doll. You don't have to worry about anything. You know, there's no kissing. There's no nothing. There's no love involved. There's just sex. You're a hole in the mouth, a hole in the ass, and a hole in the cunt. That's it. Just call it a day.
And just treat that
person like the sex toy that they are. If they're not treated as the toy, then the woman and the guy, regardless, is going to feel that way. Now, the worst, I mean, you guys, yeah, you're talking about all your girls, blah, blah, blah. That's fun. But have you ever considered you and your boy with one girl?
No.
Most guys don't do it.
I'm going to tell you why. I would never have sex with a girl with one of my dudes simply because of the fact that I don't want to look at it. I don't want to see it. It's really truly visual. I don't want that image in my brain, in my face.
Exactly.
I don't even want, realistically speaking, I don't even want to have sex in the same room, even if my boy was in there banging his girl. I don't want to see that. Because you know what happens? If you bang in your girl and you look over and see the two of them, either A, your boy's going to look and say, why the fuck you looking at my girl? Or your girl's going to look and say, why the fuck you looking at this girl?
Exactly. And I'm going to take it a step further. It's just too much of a taboo situation where I don't want to say homosexuality plays into it, but it's just two guys and a girl. I mean, we can sit up here and bullshit ourselves, but bisexuality amongst women is widely more acceptable than two guys. I mean, people can say no, it's not. Yes, it is. You know,
yeah, I agree. Yes, it is.
Society looks at two women, you know, bisexual. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, that's sexy. Oh, you know, but two guys, you know, we frown upon it. So my thing is two guys and one girl. I mean, you know, it's like you're shielding, like, damn dog, I don't want to see your shit. You know. But how can you avoid it? Two guys and one woman. At some point, you're going to see this guy's dick. You know what I'm saying? You're going to see it at some point. It's just too taboo, and it's just too much if you are a straight male.
Eventually, the penises are going to sword fight.
Yep.
Because you know what? There's going to be an exchange.
You know what, Holly? I do a radio show down here in Brooklyn, and I had a girl on, a porn girl on, and we were talking about that subject because she says that I don't like it. I would never do a DP.
Yeah.
Right. And I said,
penetration.
I said, damn, think about the guy. What if you are doing the DP and the guy comes, right? He comes on your waist or your pelvis area and it drips down onto the other dude's penis. Does the guy get freaked out and say, ew, or does he just keep doing the scene? I'm throwing the chick off. I'm running into the bathroom. I'm getting Febreze. Hand sanitizer, Lysol, and I'm getting the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
That's too much.
It's too much going on. So that's why I say, you know.
Well, you're also both talking about relationships. You're not talking about having sex. You're not talking about going in. Because think about it, Ralph, and you're in the porn business. Yes. You know, these guys have to do all types of different types of scenes, and a lot of times they are going to be in a situation with DPs very much involved. You're going to have a girl who may want to have her debut of her anus, so she may have to have that as her big seen. So mm-hmm. how do you really avoid that? I mean, mentally, you have to just be a strong man knowing what your job is, and your job is to stay hard until it's time to come. That's it.
Well, that's very true. But like you just said, Holly, it's my job. You know,
yeah.
It's like if I had a job, you know.
That's what
like
I'm explaining. You guys are talking about relationships. Like, this is all consensual. We're talking about people who have sex addictions where they can't control it. They will do it just because. Like,
right.
I don't see anybody that's having a problem with being in a relationship and, you know, having monogamy or, you know, challenging that. But we're, you know, the open relationship mentality. But we're talking about people who are very much involved in their own sexual needs and literally what their extremities are as far as how much they will do to get what they want. And
right.
There's no limit. It's not. I doubt if it's like, oh, I'm going to have sex in a shady alley with a crackhead. But
right.
you might see two bums having sex and you might start beating off in a car. I don't know. I don't know exactly, but I'm just claiming.
I'm gonna tell you this. If you're ever around me and we're somewhere and I see two bums in a car and I start jerking off, this is what I want you to do. I want you to find the heaviest thing you see in the area. I don't give a damn if it's a bat, a crowbar, a billy club, and you start beating me in the head with it because obviously
what
I ain't lost.
What if it was the what if the bum looked like Halle Berry from New Jack City?
Wow.
Well, then I gotta ask the question. Say, well, honey, if you that fine, why are you out here as a bum?
Right.
Why aren't you doing something with it?
Right.
Is she a crackhead?
Right.
She used to be Miss America. You remember New Jersey?
Yeah, I remember New Jersey. But hey, you know, Maya Campbell used to be a crackhead too, and she got her ass cleaned up.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Well, I'm talking. She played a crackhead. I'm not talking about a real crackhead.
No, Maya Campbell was a real crackhead.
Okay.
I didn't even know she got cleaned up.
I wouldn't bang Maya Campbell if she was a crackhead or not. But Halle Berry, I would watch her and beat off in the car. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, let me rephrase this. If we're out somewhere and I see two men crackheads banging each other.
Oh, why do you say two men? We're not talking about homosexuality here because I know we are not crossing those lines here. We're talking about sex addiction. If you see two women who just so happen to just left a marathon and they're just muddy and dirty and they're just on the corner just kissing and loving each other and just wilding out. They look like shit, but they're digging each other. For the fact that they're two women, you're going to dig it. But
you know something? Wait a minute. You know something? I'm going to be honest with you. In that very scenario, if I saw two really good-looking women that physically were really good-looking, but I happened to see them somewhere, and they were making out, and they looked horrible, like they were covered in mud or dirt or whatever, I still wouldn't do it because it's not attractive. Because let's be truthful, sex is a very visual thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting here saying that you have to be skinny like Halle Berry, nor else did they say that you got to be as fat as Fat Albert. But it's still an appearance, you know. It's like for all intents and purposes, if you was getting ready to kiss somebody. And they went in to kiss you, and out came the death of 40,000 years. You're going to tell that dude, say, yo, dude, you need to go brush your mouth.
Right.
You need to go hit.
But that's not physical. That's something you smell. You're talking about your other senses. If you're talking purely physical, then it's completely untrue because most girls have sex with their eyes closed.
Right.
And it's not
no offense
to you guys. It's just that we are in our heads thinking of the full scenario, which may involve flowers and clouds and rainbows and shit, but that's just where our minds are at the moment.
What,
really?
You don't need to have a visual. You just need to have a sensual feeling. You need to, you know, hear certain things. You need to feel certain things to your body. You know, it's like a lot of things that are happening. But once again, you're talking about in a relationship. We're talking about consensual sex. We're not talking about that. We're talking way beyond that. We're talking about the addictive behaviors where they're compulsory, where people are. I'm pretty sure you see it. You're in New York. You see people all the time, just inappropriate.
Well,
or
you know, I'm in America, an
American version of inappropriate.
I'm gonna be very honest with you, right? I don't think I have ever met anybody that did not have a sex addiction, but had it where it was somewhat in control.
Right.
I don't know anybody that just, like, if they just saw someone and said, yo, I got to fuck him. Oh, I got to fuck her. I don't know anybody.
Right.
I do know one person that was almost like that, but even with her, she said, I am a sex addict, and she knew she was a sex addict. But she just because she was addict, she said, just because I'm an addict, I'm not going to go fuck everything, everybody that I see.
Right.
I'm still going to be picky. I'm still going to be selective.
Right.
And who I want to fuck.
Right.
And
you're supposed to be selective. You're not looking for the quick fix of anyone. You're looking for the ultimate fix of the ultimate one. So
no, but think about like this. When you say the word addict, if you were a crack addict, right? If you was a full blown crack addict, would you care how you got the crack? Would you
not
care
how,
that,
but you would care where it came from. You would want
really?
To know
you
that,
would?
Yeah, absolutely, because if your boy down the street is okay, but he just went back to his dealer a few minutes ago to get more, that's all good. But if your dealer just got some amazing stuff and your friend from up the block just died, you want their stuff because that's how bad of an addict you are. That's
right.
What an addict does. They're going to want to
right.
have the ultimate. They don't want the
right.
quick. They don't want the norm. They don't want the whatever. You want the
right.
best. And it's at that
right.
moment where anything doesn't deserve that qualification. You're very specific.
Right.
You're very picky. I mean,
right.
in the adult industry, it's kind of hard to decide on who's a sex addict and who's literally there to just make a dollar.
Right.
Most women or
right.
most men in the industry, unfortunately, they're not there because they enjoy sex. They're there as an addition. They enjoy sex, but they're there because they're most likely looking to have a career that's fulfilling to them in the industry that they could save up or whatever to get out of. I doubt if most people that are in the industry want to stay in it.
Well, that is very true. They want to come in, make their mark, make their money, and pull out. But you got those select few that really are in the business because I just want to fuck. And they run with the mentality that even though they may think that they're sex addicts, they're like, well, listen, if I'm doing all this shit for free, why not do it on screen and get paid for it? Now, that might be the negative side of curing their addiction, because now that you're adding money to it, all you're doing is fueling it. You're not curing it. You're just fueling it.
Right.
But the question
right.
is that when your time in porn is done, and you still got that raging sex addict, now that you're quote unquote a regular person again, what do you do?
Right.
You know.
Right.
Well, question: Does Corinne Superhead have a porn?
Corinne is not a sex addict. Corinne,
no, I'm asking. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, she did have the one scene that she did with Mr. Marcus, and I think she had another scene out there. She only did like maybe two or three.
Right.
Right.
It was three.
But
yeah.
That was it. But the deal with Corinne Steffens is, and I'm gonna be honest, Corinne Steffens used her pussy to get where she wanted to go, but
right.
then when she got in a position where she got where she wanted to go, then she wanted to start naming people and blaming them for the shit they did to them. But the truth of the matter
right.
is that you did that, not them.
Right.
Nobody
right.
stuck a gun to your head and said, you're going to suck that dick today. Nobody stuck a gun in your head and said, well, you're going to do this movie today. You made the conscious choice to do that. You made a conscious choice to be on, you know, the West Side Connections video and trying to fuck everybody, the Ice Cube, Mac-10, the cast, the crew, you know, craft services. You made that decision, not them. You did that.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So where did you get off putting the blame on them? You need to be putting the blame on yourself first.
So which is why I consider her a sex addict, because she was seeking for fame out of the sex, but she was also seeking that ultimate high from it, because after that guy didn't give her notoriety and that guy didn't give her notoriety, and then after a while of continuous the behavior and she got a little bit of notoriety, it didn't really give her exactly what she needed. So she decided to make that notoriety and flip it on everybody so she can come out like the superstar, like the person who doesn't have a problem, like the person
who
went through an intervention and does not have a problem, like most addicts.
Right, but the thing with Corinne is that I think that kind of backfired, because let's be truthful, right?
Well, it backfired because it was before, you know, women like Kim Kardashian made it okay.
No, I disagree because what Corinne Stephens was doing was no different than what these white chicks was doing for years when they were considered. That's where the word groupies come from.
Mm-hmm.
There's a woman that was a groupie for the Rolling Stones since the Rolling Stones became the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Right. And she tell you this is what I did. This and a lot of those women in the 60s and 70s when rock music was really coming up, they went around they banged musicians all the time.
But that's not what their mission was. Their mission as groupies were to be muses, to be inspirational, because the free love movement of the 60s and 70s had a lot more to do with your heart, maybe not complete with relationships, but very much natural selection and the ability to have that open relationship mentality with everyone, free love. So they wanted to be that ideal muse to that musician who they loved, to show them back that they loved them, that they would make songs about them, or let them ride in their tour buses or whatever, just to have those, like, what they would consider, like, pixies or fairy-type women around
mm-hmm.
them to just, you know, have with them. And then, unfortunately, you know, the drugs and the alcohol tends to take over with a lot of that, because if you have an addiction to one thing, you're going to most likely replace it with another. So
exactly. But
even
in,
though
in
it's considered, free, but, I mean, anyone who's selling it, are they actually considered a sex addict? Because they're saying, hey, I could make more money, I might as well, I'm doing it anyway, and I'm doing it better if I get paid for it.
Right. I totally agree. But now look at Corinne Stephens now. That book, it gave her a little bit of notoriety, but the truth of the matter is that Corinne Stephens is a miserable person. That's why her relationship now is all fucked up out of the head with Darius McCray. You know, she doesn't know how to just be a regular person. Is it because...
What?
Now, this scenario, is it because she's a sex addict and she doesn't know how to deal with it, or is that she just doesn't know how to deal with being life as just Corinne Stephens and not Superhead?
Right.
Don't
well,
know.
Well, the sad fact about that is once you cross that line and you get into that arena, there's no going back to be a regular person. There's no going back to that. And
you know how many people recognize me as Star and not as Hollywood's? And that's sad because that was more years ago than it was as Hollywood than as Star.
Right.
Well, wait. I'm gonna say that because I know when I first saw you again, I called you Star. I never knew about Hollywood. I mean, I was introduced to you as Star. I didn't know about Holly. So if I would have met you in a different location and you said my name is Holly, and then I saw you as Star, you would still be Holly to me because that's how I met you.
Well, that was you, and that's many years later after knowing me as two different. But I'm saying, like, people who never knew other than, you know, seeing what they saw in the late 90s compared to seeing what they see now in person.
Right.
So they never knew, and they don't know that Holly existed. They didn't know what happened to Star. That's what happened. You know, it's been very, very few in between of having that as a brand, per se, that I'd ever let it follow me. So those who have, it's kind of amazing to me because I'll meet more people who know who I am through that than through this, where I have had more pictures, more notoriety, more radio, more press, more videos, everything as Hollywood's than I've had as Star.
Right. Well, I think with Superhead, I think she's overrated. I think she was overrated at the time she was doing what she was doing. As Ralph said, you know, the limited porn she was doing. Because I never knew who Superhead was until I actually saw the porn, you know, with Mr. Marcus. And I'm talking like recently, like maybe, 2 years ago. And when I saw the porn, I'm like, well, what's all the fuss? She's just an average chick to me. That's what I see. Because I think she just caught lightning in a bottle at the right time. Because, see, if you were to bring Superhead out right now and put her in porn right now with the girls that are out there now, she would be a below-average chick, in my opinion.
Yeah, because she really would.
She'd be a below-average chick in the porn industry today with what's out there today, some of the hot chicks that are out there today. Plus, that's why I think the book came out. I don't think she got the gratification and the satisfaction she was looking for being this you know, groupie, sex diva, or the few limited porn scenes she did. And I think a lot of it was revenge. I think what you said is very true, what both of you said. I think the name dropping in the book, I think it came because she didn't get the notoriety and the attention that she thought she was going to get. Because let's just be real about something. If you're going to choose that lifestyle to do porn, you want to get everything out of it possibly you can. If you're going to put your life on the line doing porn and being seen out there by family members and friends, you damn well want to make the money that you're going in to make. And at the same time, you want the fame that you seek out of it.
That's not true. Sound off. You got to realize that a lot of people go into porn literally thinking they're going to only do one. Most people think, I'm only going to do this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're never going to do another one. That is so true. They don't go in there thinking, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to put my name there. They don't want anyone to know their name. They don't want anyone to really know about it, especially if they go in there with the mentality, I only want to do one. They don't want anyone to even know that they're doing it. They need the money. If they're there saying, yes, I want to find a good production company, and I want to have a good agent, and I want to make sure I'm in the right places, and I'm going to go to L.A., and I'm going to do porn, and this is what I'm going to do, they're going to do it regardless. But most people do it for free anyway on Facebook.
So let me ask you guys this. You really don't think there's a contingent out there that seeks porn as a profession that thinks, hey, you know, I'm a sex addict.
There's very few.
No,
hold on.
I like sex, you know, I like fucking, I might as well get paid for it. I've seen so many porn flicks where, you know how they have the porn flicks where they interview, you know, the girl, you know, before the scene, how old are you, you know, what's your name, you know, why are you doing porn? I've seen so many where they all say the same thing, I like fucking, I like sucking dick, you know, so I just figured, you know, I might as well just do porn and get paid for it. And I know a lot of that stuff.
What do you think those girls come from when they pick the girls up for the interview?
Oh, shit. They're usually like straight off the bus from somewhere. They're from some part of the country, like
they just
Oklahoma.
Got to New York.
Yeah,
they're
exposed to it. It's the first time that they you know that they got. I'll be funny, like they got indoor plumbing or some shit like that. Because a lot, I'm gonna be honest with you. A lot of people had this misperception in porn that, particularly the girls, that, you know, I'm going to come in, I'm going to make all this money, and I'm going to be rich and famous and all this shit.
Right.
And that's the
biggest
fucking lie rolling today. No, you're not.
No doubt. Particularly
if you're black.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not. Because, and I tell this to people all the time, when it comes to a black female in porn, unless you're in that upper 1% of porn, if you're on the level of a Missy Stone or a Skin Diamond or a Roxy Reynolds, nobody is checking for you.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly. And I think the reason for that is, Ralph, the demand is so high now.
No, it's actually lower
because everyone's doing it for free. You can get it a lot easier just by going to a website to find actual performers, and then they're going to charge you a lot less because they're used to paying, you know, real performers. Now they have all these amateurs. They can give them a couple bucks, and they'll get a thousand scenes out of it.
That's what I meant. What I meant is the money's not there anymore because you can pick a person to get fucked in the scene off of a tree now. That's what I meant. The money's not there no more because they can go find anybody. Yo, you can go to a strip club and you know, coerce, you know, dance. Hey, you want to make a movie? Hell yeah, how much you going to pay me? I mean, I think when I say the demand, I mean the demand for people, for females trying to get into porn. And I think that's why the money's not there anymore like it was, you know, back in the day.
Well, actually, no. That's a whole nother conversation. But in a nutshell, one of the main reasons why the money isn't there today is realistically because of the internet. Because, all right, prime example, like in Holly's case, right?
Mm-hmm.
She did a couple of movies way back in the early 2000s. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If there was no internet and she said, you know what, I did it. I don't want to do it no more. But more importantly, I don't want nobody to put me to this person. She could legitimately go off and disappear, and just be Holly Woods and live the rest of her life. And if someone happened to see her, she would have, they would have, like, say, hey, you know what, you kind of sort of look like this person I knew. Like, when I first saw her again, you kind of sort of look like this person I know. Not saying, oh, my God, that's that star. But now with the internet, that line, that cloak is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always out there. But
right.
The other reason is because now you got these dudes and these who think that because they got and I'm not even gonna say a camcorder, that they got an iPhone, that makes them a porn producer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they'll say, like, you're right, they'll go to Strickland and say, hey, you know, you got a nice body, you ever thought about doing a porn?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, this is what they'll do. Say, this is what we're gonna do, right? We're gonna hook you up. We're gonna set your website up for you. We're gonna shoot you some scenes. You're gonna make
mm-hmm.
some money. Blah 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 blah. But what we want to do some trade for content work for you, which means you do the scenes for us and we'll do something for you. And 9 times out of 10, that person that says it is not doing jack for that check.
Mm-hmm.
It's not doing anything. I give an example, prime example. A couple of weeks ago, a girl that I knew that wanted me to be her manager, we were talking. She told me that she was going down to Atlanta. She made a deal to go down to Atlanta and shoot some stuff with this guy. He was going to shoot some scenes, and he's going to shoot some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to do a trade for content.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay. She said, well, yeah, I want to do a boy-girl scene, a girl-girl-boy scene, and I think an anal scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wait a minute. he's doing a trade for content with you. She said, yeah, he's doing a trade for content. I said, okay. So she said he's going to shoot pictures of me, and I'm going to do the three scenes over the course of the weekend. I said, okay, so what's he giving you? I don't know. Wait a minute. Then he's not doing trade for content.
What?
That's not
right.
Trade for content.
The world is stupid. That's the world they live in, and they're trying to think of making that money. Like, you could take that film and film for 4 hours, and you get, like, 1,000 films out of that.
Mm-hmm.
When you recut it and re-edit it and, you know, mix master it. You know how it is. It's
right.
Sad, but that's the internet age. That's the age we live in, where it's a lot more instantaneous. People want porn; they could literally get it anywhere. You get it on a Family
exactly.
Guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's true. You can. So I mean, a lot of times when I talk to newbies coming up in this business, and I sit there and I said, I'm not going to talk to you as some guy that's trying to fuck you. I'm not going to talk to you as some guy that want to work you. I'm going to talk to you as a person that knows what the hell they're talking about.
Right.
This is what you need to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to be smart. Do some work. And don't sit there, and if they're going to tell you, well, we want to do a scene with you, we want you to do a gangbang scene, we're going to pay you $200, then you tell them, get the fuck out of my face, because that's not how much it costs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how much it costs, whether you're a newbie or not. It's not how much a scene like that costs. You want to do for trade for content? Fine. What are you putting up in exchange for me doing this scene? You're not going to pay me no money? Okay. You're going to do the scene? Okay, when we do the scene, are you going to give me the scene to let me make some money off of my own website before you make
right.
a dime off of it?
Right.
Oh, you're not going to do that? Okay. Then what are we sitting here talking for?
Right.
Because a lot of times girls get sucked into that shit with these wannabe porn producers, and I call them wannabe pimps, that just lay out this so-called dream that your life is going to be so fabulous because I'm into it and blah, 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 blah. And it turned out to be a fucking living nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I try to tell people that, and most people listen to me, and I haven't made anybody or influenced anybody from making a bad decision. Everybody's made the right decision, which I'm actually happy about, because I don't want to see nobody get hurt in this game, because this game is not for children.
Yeah.
It's not, and it's definitely is not for you. This game is definitely not some game for you to take lightly or go into it stupidly.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be smart about it. You gotta have your wits about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to know what a fair market rate is. What the hell is exchange? What the hell is trade for content? And more importantly, the terms that they're using when I said earlier DP. Well, if you're gonna do porn, you should know what the fuck a DP is.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
you should know what a BGG scene is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's just like any job. If you worked at McDonald's, they say, well, we want you to make a quarter pound. A Big Mac. You damn sure better know we're going to have fucking Big Mac. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Treat
right.
it like a job, because it's a job. Now, yeah, it's a very unique kind of job, because you can go off and you can have all this sex with people, you know, and you're put out there on the red carpet, you know, for exoticas or AVN shows, and they'll make you feel like you're a queen. But you know something? Exotica is 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
3 days out of 365. So the other 362 days, what are they going to do for you? When someone says that they're your manager, what are they doing for you?
Mm-hmm.
Are they just saying, well, I'm your manager, but they're going to come to the set, they're going to sit around trying to bang the other chicks, they're going to, when you get paid, they're going to keep your money, you not knowing what the hell is going on. They're going to be saying you need to do this scene to make yourself big, and you're in there to getting ass fucked by like 6 guys. That's not your manager. Your manager's supposed to look out for you.
Let me ask you, I got an interesting question. This is very, very in-depth and interesting stuff you guys are talking about. I want to ask you a question, though. Who's more likely to get fucked in the porn industry? And when I say fucked, I mean literally fucked over, screwed over. Is it the country-ass girls right off the bus that, you know, just found out what indoor plumbing was? Or do guys, you know,
I believe guys get mostly screwed over because they don't pay them enough.
Yeah.
But then you could, per scene, guys get probably like a third or I don't even know what the percentage is compared to a woman, the pay. It's almost like male prostitute.
Yeah,
it is.
Peanuts.
Sad.
That's why so many, that's why when you, if you have a porn store anywhere around you and you walk up in there, that's why you see it saying a Justin Slayer production or a T-Boy production, because the guys realizing that I'm not going to get paid as much as the girls do,
mm-hmm.
right? But if I have my own production line,
mm-hmm.
right, that's where my money is going to come in from, because I could have the production and I could shoot my own content and not say I have to be in it, but still get the chunk of the check,
mm-hmm.
get the chunk of the profits.
You know what's so amazing about that? It's amazing the correlation and the parallels of the porn industry and the hip hop industry. It's amazing because it's pretty much the same thing. You know, as a hip hop artist, you know, more than likely you're going to get fucked over as an artist. You know, especially, you know, if you get with the wrong management company, the wrong label. But everybody knows in the hip-hop industry, the real money is in production, you know.
Well, that would be with any musical genre, you know. That's
yeah,
the music
yeah.
industry in itself. You know, you're an artist and you're selling your art. Now, your art you can create, and somebody else can say, I want a percentage of what you create. And then somebody else could say, I want a percentage of what you sing. And then someone else could say, I want a percentage of what you remaster and remix.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all getting money just because you're recording at their spot. It's always
yeah.
going to be like that in the industries
mm-hmm.
anyway, because it's a service industry, sort of. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're a service selling music to people. So people
mm-hmm.
who have their hands in their pockets, they put them in deep because they know they have all
mm-hmm.
right to. They house
mm-hmm.
the spot to make it all happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's the same thing in the adult industry. I don't
mm-hmm.
really know many other adult industry companies, but I know late 90s, early 2000s, for African-American adult film artists, Caesar Girls were getting paid the most out of anybody. And it was very, very – it was supposed to be on a higher class, on a verge of – dynasty sort of style, but it didn't get
mm-hmm.
that far because of the management and everyone else that they had around them. Now, if they were smart and they would have given a portion of proceeds to their talent, then most likely they would have had more of a unified talent and had a lot more films to this day that would be all over the internet. They'd still be making money off of by, you know,
mm-hmm.
having those masters. But it's just, it was no camaraderie amongst the artists and the production. So that's why a lot of artists became their own producers in both music and in this industry, because when you have your own entity to sell and it's from your own craft and your own service, it's kind of hard to have that or leave that creative control on someone and know that they're getting all of your money just so they could have their name on it and it's all of your work.
So, I don't even like talking about Mr. Stone because he was a moron. I give him credit. He had a really good platform, and he had a lot of really good girls that could have really did something. But
it wasn't Charles. It was Al that had it all together. Charles was just the face behind it because, you know, he had his wife and, of course, the Queens areas. But the Bronx is where it was at. Al's had it held down because even the production studio was in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm. But Charles was kind of like the face of it, and he really just rubbed people the wrong way when you met him, and I know a lot of people did not want to work with him, and he may have been the greatest person to work with, but he just rubbed people off when you first met him.
He was not the greatest person to work for. He wasn't the latter, the opposite. Just that he had a great business platform as far as how they paid their entertainers and how they did their production. Like who does photo shoots and adult films in high class worldwide hotels, you know, Caesar Productions. They did that so they could have somewhat of a brand behind themselves as being like the leaders of adult films for African Americans, but also classy adult films. They were on this verge of really building this amazing empire that fell through because of the attitude of one person that kind of like had a Napoleon mentality, and he wanted to have so much control. But he had a partner, and the partner was great to work with and to